From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 6th day of August 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, Mark Russo will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with the Corn Belt. And along the way, we'll check in with the folks at the Anderson's Grain Elevator right here in Champaign, Illinois, to see what conditions look like on the ground here and check in on basis. And we'll do all of that during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up. Listen to us online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at what happened in Chicago and to look forward to the USDA August crop production report numbers. Thanks for being with us, Kurt. What are your expectations for Friday's USDA numbers?
Well, world wheat continues to be the concern. It's taken over a big role in the leadership. In fact, the commodity funds have seen some value in buying wheat futures. They're along an estimated 45 to 50,000 contracts Chicago wheat, feeling that one, the technical picture is strong to the upside, and two, the world wheat fundamentals should start to show sizable declines here starting here on Friday morning's supply demand balance sheet. Probably the news item now is Australia. They're talking about the fourth to fifth driest weather pattern on record, and that's gaining a lot of attention. USDA's presently got the Aussie crop around 22 million metric tons. Ideas are they could be as low as 13 to 18 million metric tons. So the emphasis is on the wheat. It could be a situation like the world corn supply demand balance sheet, where we had world corn inventories as high as 230 million metric tons. Now we're probably down below 150 million metric tons. So it's a bullish item here, and they're trying to milk it for what it's worth here. And I believe Friday we'll get a little bit more insight on what some of the WASDE USDA numbers have to show. Even oats caught on fire today. Oats have rallied over 40 cents off the low there. The old saying is oats knows, so some of these oat traders will be watching what the oat market has to do here over the next few days, Todd.
So as I was traveling back from Fargo, I spent the week there last week and made the trip back home on Sunday, came through a large part of the Corn Belt rather than going through Wisconsin. Once I got to Minneapolis, St. Paul turned straight south and went to Mason City, Iowa on Interstate 35 and then turned back to the east and wandered through the Quad Cities and the rest of the way home through Peoria. That crop from Minneapolis to Mason City, Iowa clearly had too much rain at some point. As I was talking with Mark Russo a bit earlier, because we record that weather segment you'll hear in just a few minutes here on the Closing Market Report earlier, he thinks that there was a really big rainfall event early in June, probably in that part of the world. I couldn't see that on the 30 and the 60-day departures on the National Weather Service, but it had a big impact. It looks like that was running out of gas. There's a large part of, I think, southwestern Minnesota and northwestern Iowa that's in some respects the same area. And what I did notice, Kurt, on the 30 and 60, and I don't know whether you saw this on my Twitter feed or not, was that there was a drought area. Well, dry area, not drought, a dry area right in the center of state of Iowa for the last 30 days, too. So there's a lot of variability in this crop. However, from the east of Mason City all the way the rest of the way home, and I think in your home area there in the Bloomington Normal area, the crop just looks tremendous. So kind of the haves and have-nots, and it'll be interesting to see if the trade, I think, which is what, at about 178 bushels or 180 bushels to the acre is too high, and what USDA will come out with. What's your anticipation for that corn yield number to look like on Friday?
Well, there was quite a bit of optimism. We'll be over 180, but I think 178, like you mentioned, is kind of the benchmark there. In reality, it's probably 176 as a nation. This afternoon's crop conditions report is expected to show another 1% drop in corn and beans both. But as you mentioned, there's some isolated areas that Minnesota, but you don't go on west of there, the Dakotas have dried out tremendously. Then, too, you take that northern part of Missouri, they've just been totally devastated here all during the growing season. Then you take up a Michigan, too wet early, then they've dried out considerably. But if you're a fan of Twitter, get on Twitter because we're starting to see tipbacks materialize in some of these dry pockets. There's even a couple pockets there in Champaign County where they've they had some rain, but they did not have the timely rain and a little bit of tipback. But too, you got to remember though that some of these pictures are talking one's position, and I'm sure the seed corn dealers are out there showing some awful large ears and some good growing conditions for the product they're selling. But as we go through the rest of the growing season here, the main concern, though, continues to be test weight and the depth of the kernel. It's completely opposite last year. As far as the beans go, I think it's still a little too early there. I believe the trade is dialed in to seeing a bean yield upwards to 50 bushels to the acre. And the main concern continues to be on the demand side there until we see some type of agreement with China. We've got to continue to see the Europeans and some of these other non-traditional buyers pick up some of this export business. And this export business of beans has just been phenomenal. This morning's export inspections report was strong again. Over 893,000 tons of beans shipped out. We also shipped out 1.2 million metric tons of corn, so we're shipping out what we sold on corn and beans. Wheat's kind of struggling, but that's going to pick up here if some of these world supply demand numbers come in low on Friday.
And it looks like the North American Free Trade Agreement, even from the Canadian side, I saw something from their primary negotiator suggesting that they'd like to be back in the mix. U.S. and Mexico talking on Friday. Sounds like that's finally actually really moving forward now.
Yeah, there's some positive news coming across from what it has taken place. But as you mentioned, Mexico, Canada, and hopefully China back on board here. We just can't lose our market share that we've been losing over the years. We just can't lose anymore. We've got to continue to supply those markets and keep our foot in the door there.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Very good. Take care.
Kirk Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, let's start with that $12 billion aid package the President and the United States Department of Agriculture are working towards as it relates to trade issues. Agriculture, of course, is still awaiting some of the technical details of the Trump administration aid package. And while the financial relief is welcome, agriculture is actually advocating for successful and quick end to the ongoing trade issues and a finish that would preferably avoid the need for the aid, says Missouri Corn Growers Association Director of Public Policy, Shane Kinney.
We're still waiting to hear from USDA exactly how that's going to be implemented. I think we all know, even though that's going to be helpful, hopefully, it's not going to make farmers whole. And we're just continuing to push on making sure we advance these trade policies.
Now, the Department of Agriculture has indicated aid could be sent to farmers by the end of next month. However, basing aid off 2018 production, the timing is a bit of a head-scratcher, says Kenny.
They're looking at 2018 production. So that was concerning to us because if that's the case, we don't think they're going to get, you know, that aid out in a timely manner. If they want to get it out in September, then there's no way 2018 production is going to work.
For his state, Missouri, add drought concerns into the mix, along with the continuation of the trade war.
The drought that we're seeing in Missouri, that's going to impact folks who really need the help not being able to get it because of if it's based on 2018 production. And couple that as well with, you know, these China tariffs and the retaliation is impacting a lot of stored corn from last year. And so if we're really trying to help how this trade issue is impacting our current markets, then that needs to be taken into consideration as well.
And Kenny says for the aid package to be helpful, it must arrive on time and reflect the hurt farmers are facing. Well, let's stay with the trade issue, soybeans and China. That nation immediately, by the way, responded to the latest USDA tariff threat by publishing a list of $60 billion in U.S. imports it will lay tariffs on. That's dependent on whether or not the U.S. follows through on its latest trade threats. Bloomberg says China will levy duties ranging from 5% up to 25% on more than 5,000 kinds of U.S. imports if America follows through on its threat of another $200 billion in tariffs. Beijing will impose 5% tariffs on more than 600 types of U.S. goods, including planes and computers. A 10% tariff goes on almost 1,000 products, including textiles. A 20% tariff will apply to more than 1,000 items, including chemicals and papers. The one that hits agriculture hardest will be a proposed 25% duty on items like meat, wheat, and wine. A Chinese Ministry of Commerce statement says the implementation date will be subject to U.S. actions, and that China reserves the right to continue introducing other countermeasures. Well, the American Soybean Association is back in Washington, D.C., just weeks after their July Board of Directors meeting. Grower leaders are meeting with officials at the Department of Agriculture and with lawmakers to talk over options for offsetting the long-term damage from China's retaliatory tariff on American soybeans. The president of the ASA says they know that President Trump is aware of how hard the tariff battle is hitting agriculture, especially soybeans. Given the scale of potential damage from the tariff, he says we need more market opening measures if we are going to survive the repercussions on soybean exports. The ASA is asking officials to increase funding for export promotion in the new farm bill. On the subject of the president, he's been tweeting about SNAP, work requirements, and the farm bill. The biggest difference between the House and the Senate versions of the bill are front and center on Twitter. President Trump jumped into the debate via Twitter in an effort to tip the scales toward House Republicans ahead of a conference negotiation. When the House and the Senate, quote, meet on the very important farm bill, hopefully they will be able to leave the work requirements for food stamp provisions that the House approved, end quote. Trump also suggested the Senate needs to eliminate its filibuster rule, an apparent recognition of the fact that the new work requirements for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program would need to get the 60 votes to overcome any filibuster on the bill. Democrats largely opposed the work requirements in the House bill. Anti-hunger advocates weren't happy with Trump's tweet, saying the new requirements will hurt people in low-wage jobs with unsteady hours, people with health conditions, and children. The Foundation for Government Accountability, a hardline conservative welfare reform group, were happy with Trump's tweet, noting that there's never been a better time for welfare reform with today's booming economy. And finally today, if you've been wondering why it is that Mitch McConnell has decided to step onto the conference committee for the farm bill, it's related to hemp, not marijuana, but hemp that's used for fiber. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's efforts date back to 2013 to legalize hemp, and that may be finally paying off now that the language legalizing hemp has made it into the Senate's version of the farm bill. Still, considerable challenges remain. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. Up next, at the 2018 Summer Cattle Industry Business Meeting, Ron Hayes sat down with Tom Hayes, the CEO for Tyson Foods, to discuss trade issues.
Tom, I know that Tyson, you alluded to the group here today at the Summer Cattle Industry Business Meeting, that you've got to be engaged with trade if you're going to be successful in your line of businesses. Where are we in your mind? In other words, there's been so much rolling, and these markets are really getting riled up a great deal right now. Where do you see all this coming out at the end of the day?
I hope at the end of the day things get settled, because what's hurting us right now is the uncertainty. So uncertainty is not our friend. So we need to have relationships that require, you know, good discussion and good for both parties in terms of the trade. But we need open access. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that's, you know, free trade everywhere, but it's definitely fair trade. And to make sure that we're happy with the relationships that we have. we are a nation that produces the best quality at a good cost food, and we need to have the access to the markets and be on a level playing field in order to maximize the potential. So we are actively engaged with anybody that we can talk to that will have influence and certainly express our position that that is what we need to be playing for, because it's so important to our industry. And it's not just about, I would say, the cattle industry, but all over the food, you know, the food industry, for us to be open access to the markets that we need to achieve.
How difficult it is for Tyson to be a player when markets are so differently structured? In other words, they got different rules for China, different rules for Japan, different rules for the European Union.
You know, it just makes it more difficult if you have, you know, individual bilateral agreements that need to be struck instead of having, you know, master agreements with, like, you know, NAFTA and, you know, certainly TPP. We believe that in any case, you know, what needs to be done is the trade needs to be open. So if we have individual relationships, that's fine. But certainly the more that we can get done with one agreement, the better. But again, it's just about getting that access and having, you know, a reasonable time period to get it done so we don't live with the uncertainty.
That was Tom Hayes, president and CEO for Tyson Foods, speaking with Ron Hayes of Oklahoma. He's a farm broadcaster. Hayes of Tyson Foods spoke during the general session of the 2018 Summer Cattle Industry Business Meeting in Denver, Colorado. Let's check in on the cash grain market with Amy Sage, now at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Amy. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Todd.
Tell me about conditions of the crop in the area first.
Yep. So right here in the greater Champaign area, we have been really fortunate. You know, obviously there's spots where I had a little bit of water damage early on, particularly in beans, and a few areas that could really use a rain. But by and large, we've been very fortunate, obviously cool temperatures and getting rains, you know, the past few weekends have really helped. I think most people feel that we've got some really solid potential out there. There's a little bit of tip back in that, but from the potential that we were starting with, even if we've shaved some off, I think the general consensus is that we're going to be in really good shape. We're planning on a large corn crop here, and a lot of beans look really good too. So we'll see what ends up happening. We could use a little bit of rain now, obviously. We'll take it, especially now that temperatures have warmed up a little bit, but we do have chances tonight and tomorrow. So hopefully we'll get that, but overall, we're feeling pretty lucky around here.
Has old crop corn moved enough that you're satisfied you'll have the space, and do farmers have much left to move?
Well, I guess I would say we're selling more trains progressively and have been throughout the course of the summer in anticipation for a few more bushels this fall and an earlier start to harvest. We've been hoping trains will show up a little bit quicker than what they have been, but we're obviously planning for that, and hopefully we'll get caught up here over the course of the next few weeks. It's going to be a busy few weeks now, heading into harvest, getting in position. There is some old corn left to get sold. I would say not as much as last year, and we'll see probably a little bit more selling pressure by the end of the month when September contracts will have to be rolled and new DP rates will go into effect the 1st of September. We have had people rewarding the rally, though, particularly in corn. Beans, not so much, but there's much fewer beans left to get sold than what there is corn. And we're seeing people selling into this rally, and I think we'll continue to do so.
And just your fall delivery prices, please.
Yes, actually today our bid did change a little bit. We are $3.57 for fall corn, and for soybeans we are $8.58.5 across the scale.
Thank you so much, Amy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Amy Sage. She is with the Andersons. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Listen to us on demand online at willag.org. This is the Closing Market Report for Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is here. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Mark, thanks for being with us. Mm-hmm. Let's start in the Midwest. I've seen a lot of the corn crop over the last week. I got to say, the corn crop looks really good for the most part. There are some areas as I've talked about already today on the show, including a stretch from Minneapolis to Mason City, so Minneapolis south into Iowa, that clearly was too wet, and it had a pretty good-sized impact on what I think the yields will be in that area. But then there are just tremendous number of acres that look really, really good. What's your assessment of the Corn Belt at this point, and what kind of weather conditions will we have over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, well, it's quite a bit of variability here across the Corn Belt from a precipitation standpoint here recently. There's been, like you mentioned, there's been some of the wet pockets. There's also been some of the drier pockets. And it looks like from a macro standpoint, as we look out for the next couple of weeks, we feel that the majority of the Midwest will be in a drier than normal pattern, or in other words, will receive below normal rainfall amounts. Now, again, it's not like any kind of wide scale major dryness, but as we look out ahead, our forecast for this week is calling for about 40% of the belt receiving amounts. What we would define as significant amounts over half of an inch. And then for next week, coverage looks a little bit higher than what we're seeing this week, at about 45% of the Midwest receiving amounts over half of an inch here. So from a rainfall standpoint, we feel that between about a half and two-thirds of the belt will feature below normal rainfall here during the next couple of weeks. But obviously, if you're in those kind of zones of rain, such as what we're kind of seeing, well, we saw here overnight in portions of Iowa and northwest Illinois and portions of Michigan here coming up here later today, then you're the winner. But then other areas will even completely miss out here over the next couple of weeks.
Any concerns that you really have in the Corn Belt as it relates to either the corn or the soybean crop, or overall does it seem to be, as most are suggesting, in really pretty good condition?
Well, we still have seen at times some heat spikes or heat waves. We saw that throughout July, especially the first half of July, which did coincide with some corn pollination. We're seeing that here just over the weekend. We had a brief period of heat here in the Midwest. Expect overall a warmer bias, but we're not seeing any other extreme heat or anything that persistent from a highly anomalous temperature perspective as we look out over the next couple of weeks. So again, not an ideal situation, but also not, severely problematic either.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.